This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or cfur.ca. At the Civic Center in downtown Prince George, Clavey today, the Highway of Tears 20th Anniversary Symposium was held April 7th to 10th, 2026. The first symposium occurred in 2006. It gained attention not only from the community, but actually managed to raise national awareness on the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirit peoples along Highway 16. 20 years later, people from all over the region are converging once again over the course of 4 days, each one focusing on where the movement began in 2006, where it is now in 2026, and where it's headed into the future. At the second day of the event on April 8th, we were fortunate enough to speak with BC Assembly of First Nations Regional Chief Terry Teagee and Chief Administrative Officer or Executive Director of Child and Family Services at Carrie-Sicani Family Services, Mary Teagee. We bring you to that conversation at the Civic Center now. Ms. Teagee, it's a huge journey, but looking back, are you able to summarize a little of what was discussed yesterday in terms of where the movement started, and then we'll get into today's programming of where we are.
So yesterday we really talked about where we started, what the Highway of Tears and how the 2006 symposium came to be. And of course that started with when the 14-year-old Ayla Sarek Ogier went missing, and what ended up happening is that, you know, it was enough. It was just the catalyst that just said, okay, we got to do something. At the time, then Rena Zatorski was counselor of Lately Tene Nation, and she put a challenge out and a call to all the other governments, organizations, to come forward and do something. And so we collaborated together at Carrie-Sicani Family Services, and we actually, in less than 8 weeks, we had this symposium between 800 some days and 1,000 people some days. So many different levels of government. Ministers were there, deputy ministers, Solicitor General, Attorney General of Canada, and all the other stakeholders came together, and that's how the recommendations report came to be. In 2006, a walk had started in Prince Rupert and then culminated in Prince George to begin the 2006 Highway of Tears Symposium.
Is there anything you want to add into the past, where we were moving into where we are, Terry?
Well, I think we got to recognize where we're at that time in 2006. I mean, this was a culmination of everything over the last 15, 20 years. There were many initiatives in Vancouver about missing and murdered just women and girls in the downtown east side. And much of the attention, national attention, was drawn there. But then this started gaining traction in terms of the Highway of Tears and missing, murdered just women and girls. I recall many stories that were brought up, and I was, you know, sharing that story with anybody who would listen, and including my wife. And then, you know, this happened with Aaliyah, and at that time she was on council. And I just, matter of fact, I was just finishing university at the time at UNBC. Both my wife and I were UNBC students. And she put this challenge out. And I think at that time too as well, really calling out the ministers and the politicians, and some of them, matter of fact, came up to their credit. I suppose they were held accountable to bring forward the Solicitor General and what have you, came forward with resources and funding. And also all the other political organizations came forward to start working on this issue. You know, it ended up becoming bigger than just the Highway of Tears, because it became a provincial-wide thing, because there were many, many missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls in the downtown east side, right? That was really important.
Obviously, to understand the present issue of missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirit peoples, we have to consider the past, but today's symposium theme is centered around where we are. What are you able to share about the movement's present focus? Would you like to speak to that, Mary?
Well, I think you have to realize where we're at now. Like, it has taken us 20 years to get here. The Highway of Tears Recommendations Report, Recommendation 32, had called for an annual symposium so that we can report out on the achievement of the many recommendations. That never happened because we didn't have the committed funds, the commitment to make the change from every level of government, including the RCMP. So here we're at, finally having the symposium after 20 years and looking at where we are today. We have achieved some of the recommendations, but there's still a lot of work to do, and so there still needs to be more funding, more resources, and more personal commitment to make that fundamental change that we're all seeking, and that's just to make a better and safer world for our children.
Would you care to add anything to where we're at presently with the movement, Terry?
Well, over the last 20 years, you see parties come and go, federally and provincially, and the problem that I see in regards to Indigenous issues such as this or any other issues is that these parties, the first thing that they generally do is, you know, ignore First Nations rights. You know, that's the first thing to go in terms of commitments in regards to what was already committed to perhaps by the previous administration or party. And that's a real problem. There's no consistency. There's no, as you heard before, you know, the resources brought to bear are always reneged, or the promises that were supposed to be there aren't followed through or cut. And that's always an issue. We see this not only here, but we see this nationally. The current report card in terms of implementing the National Indigenous Women and Girls Inquiry, it's not there. It started out very minimally, and it's gotten even worse, I would say.
Looking at tomorrow's symposium, where we're going, you've touched on a few of these points already, but what does a foreseeable future hold in your view?
Tomorrow what we're going to be doing is we're going to be listening to the families and to the participants of the symposium, much like we did back in 2006. In 2006, we listened to the stakeholders, we asked questions of the families, we asked questions of the government, and we asked RCMP questions, et cetera, et cetera. And that's how the 33 recommendations came to be. And so tomorrow, what we're hoping to do is to look at those gaps, to look at what are the priorities now, and then to revamp and to update the Highway of Tears Recommendations Report, Highway of Tears Recommendations Report 2.0, perhaps. So that's what we're going to be doing tomorrow, is really looking forward as to what we need to do moving forward. And really, I think we're looking at some of the speakers tomorrow on the panels. It's really about a sense of hope that we want to make sure that the families and citizens of Canada have.
In terms of, you know, what you're seeing coming down the line in the foreseeable future, Mr. TG, what do you think the future holds for the movement?
Well, I think there's a real come-to moment with this provincial government in regards to, I would say, questioning the leadership and in terms of the direction they're going. Is this government, the federal government, committed to reconciliation? Are they committed to fully implementing the 261 calls to justice? You know, that's really the fundamental question. These governments and also the institutions such as the RCMP and many of the other police forces, how committed are they to not only dealing with the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls, but also to reconciliation, which has been identified in all these reports, which is really important. So we'll see. And like I said before, the first thing that's brushed off is Indigenous rights, it's Indigenous issues that many of these parties tend to do when it suits them. That's untenable. It's hard to, difficult to work with. And I certainly hope in the future that there's a solid commitment from these governments.
If you'd like to speak to that as well, Mary, but what do you think the litmus test would be to see if indeed the governments, the powers that be, are taking this issue seriously?
I think there has to be committed funding, certainly, and what I would like to see nationally is actually Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women Act, much like they have in the States. They have the Violence Against Women Act, which was, of course, brought forward by Joe Biden, reauthorized by Joe Biden, and that act ensures that there's funding there for those preventative programs, the awareness, the safety programs. We need to do the same in Canada, and I think for me that would be the litmus test that, yes, absolutely, we take this seriously. We take it so seriously that we are going to put it into law to make sure that every Indigenous woman and girl, LGBTQIA+, is safe. And until that day happens, we're going to keep, we're just going to keep perpetuating the same cycle of, you know, stop, start, stop, start. And we can't have that. We need committed funding, committed resources, and commitment of mind and commitment of heart by politicians.
So obviously, we'd like to get to a future where these symposiums are no longer necessary because Indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirit people are no longer disappearing. But what can the community do to strengthen the work this community does here regionally, locally? Writing to MLAs, MPs, other actions individuals or organizations can take. Would you care to speak to that one first, Terry?
Well, I think we've seen this other places, like the city of Vancouver adopting the declaration as part of their policy and law. I think we can't deviate from that. And what we're seeing here is terrible, what this premier is saying in regards to pausing DRIPA or repealing it or making amendments. That's probably the fundamental issue here in regards, because DRIPA was utilized to change the narrative and to really bring all First Nations and Indigenous peoples up to a level playing field. And if we can't do that, it's obviously we see the detriments of that, you know, high risk of our Indigenous peoples in regards to stuck in vulnerable places. And DRIPA is really important. We just recently had a women's conference in Kelowna. And one of the biggest issues that we're trying to prevent, and a lot of the recommendations, if you recognize, it's about prevention. You know, we've seen Bill C-5, the One Canada Act, 14 and 15, to advance projects, to approve them. And the problem there, these are big mega projects and potential to put women at risk, you know, with man camps. And we've seen examples from Tahltan, Squamish, and also Tsilcoton, to put it in their policy to highlight and to prevent Indigenous women from becoming vulnerable and putting really policy into place to address the issues of man camps. So it's really important because, quite simply, this changes the whole narrative, right? It changes in regards to how companies conduct themselves. I think if we can do that, like on a wider level, on a wider scale, we're still seeing many Indigenous peoples just in general are more vulnerable. We see the vast majority of our Indigenous peoples, about 60-70% are Indigenous here in Prince George that are homeless. The vast majority that are dying, 6 or 7 times the normal rate. If you're Indigenous women, it's 11 times. So, you know, these different issues which really affect our Indigenous women and girls. We need to do something about it in regards to making sure that there are policies, laws to prevent it from happening and do something about it. You know, this is a microcosm of general society. We're trying to change a culture within the RCMP, within politics, but I think it's trying to change a narrative as well, if you really think about it, of this relationship within First Nations, Indigenous peoples in this country.
Do you have anything to add to that, Mary? Or
I think the one thing, like, you know, what has to change in society is that we need to understand the root causes of this. These are systemic issues. That's what causes the vulnerability of Indigenous women and girls, LGBTQIA+, because of the impacts of residential school and the impacts of colonization. We have to deal with those root causes, and if we don't, we're going to keep having to deal with the issues of vulnerability. And I think so it is a combined, concerted effort by every level of health services, of social services, and every level of government. I was really pleased to see that there are a lot of MPs and MLAs that showed up yesterday and today. Some of them are going to stay right till the end. They're going to stay here till Friday for the pillar raising. So that's a good thing, but certainly citizens can demand better from their MLAs and MPs, and if that takes writing letters or meeting with them and always bringing this up forward, you know, we would definitely appreciate that, because this is not an Indigenous problem, it's a Canadian problem.
We've got one thing to look forward to as a capstone, is the unveiling of the pillar tomorrow. Is there anything either of you would like to add about that pillar?
Well, the pillar really, the idea came to have a commemorative marker for the families of the victims. So in our way, like Indigenous ways, many of us, when we lose a lost loved one, a year after is when we raise either a totem pole or we raise the headstone. And if you don't have your loved one's remains, you can't do that. So it's really symbolic and ceremonial to have a pillar that recognizes that place where they can go, the place that's just for them. And it's also as a marker and a reminder of what we're dealing with in this country. So the pillar is going to be placed by the river. The river is healing for us. And we're just hoping that this is a real symbol of hope and of healing.
The symposium's closing event is occurring Friday, April 10th at Cottonwood Island Park in Prince George, Clayton-Tanay, where the Pillar of Hope will be unveiled between 9:30 a.m. and 2 p.m. You've heard remarks from Chief Administrative Officer or Executive Director of Child and Family Services at Carrier-Sicani Family Services, Mary Teege, alongside BC Assembly of First Nations Regional Chief, Terry Teege, at the Highway of Tears 20th Anniversary Symposium at the Civic Center in downtown Prince George, Clayton-Tanay, Wednesday, April 8th, 2026. both pivotal community figures working towards solutions on the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirit peoples. This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or cfur.ca.